PMC Jamison Health Talk, News Radio 1200 WKST. Good morning, Lori Brothers.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm coming off a three-day weekend.
Well, good for you. Good for you. Some of us not so lucky, but good for you.
Yeah. So, you know, I know your first question. Did I grill vegetables this weekend?
Well, I know you did. I know you did.
Yeah, it was good.
Good. Good
it
for
was
you.
Good. So we had a great weekend, and we are excited to be here today. So we are bringing in our expert, our Dr. Matta, board-certified psychiatrist, and the president of Psych Med Associates. And we're going to talk about something that's actually been in review all month. May has been National Mental Health Awareness Month. So we are at the very tail end of that, but really this is an ongoing awareness that we are hoping to continue to bring to the public, and that is to understand the importance of how mental health is felt by those who are in a process of managing this kind of condition and illness and looking for the help and support that they need. So, you know, what's interesting about it is that this year's theme was Life with a Mental Illness, and they have a website that was created specifically this year that calls out for individuals who are having the need to share what they're feeling when it comes to their mental health issues in a way that others can understand, so that there's less stigma, so that there's more compassion right. and support. And I have to tell you, I went on to that site. Let me see if I can find it for you here. That brought me to a point of a deeper understanding. If you have a heart, and if you are willing to listen to some of the perspectives of the people who are willing to share what's happening for them in their experience, because mental health pain is not something that necessarily can be viewed, but is felt by those who are feeling it. And if you can understand that, what happens is you start to be able to give support where it is needed for those who are, you know, willing to share that in a way that brings a perspective and some caring. So that's what that whole focus was for this year, and it really is something that is ongoing. So we have Dr. Matta with us here today, and he is going to be discussing from that perspective of treatment and what people need, this idea of bringing that awareness to the public.
Doctor, would we be surprised of everything that happens to be all the issues that you deal with that are under the umbrella of mental health?
What do you mean by surprise?
I mean the amount of what all encompasses?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we take it for granted how powerful the mind is. There's a concept in medicine called psychosomatic phenomenon, where the brain and the body have this continuum or this connection that occurs, where the brain causes physical manifestations. I'll give you kind of a simplistic example. So we have this ideology called fight or flight syndrome, right?
Right.
Where if you're in the woods and you see a bear in front of you, your fight or flight response kicks in, where you either stand and fight the bear or you run away. And your body is set up to do one of two things. You're standing there facing the bear, and your heart is going to start beating rapidly, 200 beats a minute, but you haven't taken a step. Why does your heart start beating even though your muscles aren't moving? That's your brain telling your body what to do. That's kind of the simplistic concept mm-hmm. of the psychosomatic phenomenon, but it translates into many other types of things. So you can connect the brain to so many different physical manifestations, whether it's syndromal things. You know, I'll give you another example. I think that there's a reason why we see so many diagnoses of fibromyalgia nowadays where we didn't 20 years ago. So to answer your question, I think we'd be absolutely surprised that there are so many things that fall under psychiatry or
right.
even brain manifestations that we don't really consider.
The history of mental health.
The history of mental health goes back centuries, goes back even beyond that. The ancient Egyptians are the ones that defined hysteria as an upward displacement of the uterus. And they said that the females had this reaction where they got hysterical, and they believed that it's because the uterus was upwardly displaced in the body. So they recognized that something happened in people that was attributed to a physical manifestation. So it goes back, you know, thousands of years. Now we have better ideas of, you know, what's going on with people than you know, an upward displacement of the uterus, obviously. But we've come so far in understanding things. I often say that we've had more advancements in psychiatry in the last 20, 30 years than maybe anything else in medicine, you could argue.
How so?
Well, look where we were. Yeah, we were in an age where we used straitjackets and we used ice baths and we used pulling teeth as a method of treatment for these patients because we didn't know any better. And now these patients who were once confined to asylums are on some level functioning in society.
Right.
Now, they're functioning in a limited capacity, but they're not confined, never to be seen by public for the rest of their lives.
How are they able to function today compared to then?
They have a support system in place nowadays where they can engage in vocational activities. So they have some work programs where they can do some custodial work or they can do some volunteering in a limited capacity. But I am of the mindset that work can be very therapeutic, where you give them a sense of purpose. Now, some of these people still live within the confines of their symptoms and their illness. But if you give them distractions, if you give them a sense of purpose, then they're not dictated all day, every day by their symptoms. And they're ideally not labeled by them. And when people see them, they may not necessarily recognize that they're psychiatric patients. So that combined with obviously things like medication advancements. So the medications have really come tremendously far. Some of them discovered accidentally, some of them purposely. But they've really made an advancement in our ability to treat, you know, these patients where we never have before.
Now, without these medications, how would these people really be able to live day to day or not in some instances?
It depends on the illness, obviously. Yeah. It depends on the illness. But you can't say that medications alone are going to treat them. There has to be a combined treatment team effort and support effort. There has to be a good supportive environment. There has to be a treatment team approach. And the patient has to be willing to engage in the treatment as well. I often tell the patients that you don't depend on the medications alone to make you better. It's just one step on a stepladder to changing the light bulb, right? You have to take those other steps to get up there to accomplish the goal of changing that light bulb. So while the medications are part of that process, and for some people they're a huge part, again, depending on the illness, they're not the entire part. Extremely variable.
So it's a situation where they're not alone.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are
other
people with the same issues that they have.
Yeah. And we're talking such a wide variety of things, you know, whether it's depression, whether it's ADHD, whether it's schizophrenia, whether it's bipolar disorder. So, you know, it all depends, and it depends on the severity of which that disorder is expressed. Substance abuse, you know, there's so many different things that go on. But, and it also changes with the generations, too, and the stressors that are going on. You know, the things faced in this generation weren't faced 50 years ago, and we all know that. The things faced by the younger generation are not faced by the younger generation 50 years ago, with things with social media pressures and so on and so forth. So as the times change and the treatment changes, so do the results.
And you don't have the physical facilities as you once did either, correct?
No, those have been changing too, at least in this country. So with John F. Kennedy signing the Community Mental Health Act back in the 60s, he made it a point to make sure that services were provided to those individuals within the community so that we limit the need for those people to just, again, be kind of locked away forever
right.
in state institutions, which served a good purpose. You know, we have now an infrastructure in place so that those people can get access to services within the community and ideally try to live the highest quality of life within a society and within the public. And not necessarily always be confined to state institutions.
How about the limitations that are faced by patients and providers in treating mental health?
So we obviously have an imperfect system. We all know that. And access to resources is still a problem. We don't have enough providers. They're still not putting out enough psychiatrists, enough therapists, enough support system people.
Now, when you say support system people, you mean what?
Counselors, nurses. Mental health is not always the most attractive field. And I think that's because the patients that are needing treatment are sometimes hard for people in medicine to want to treat. You know, I often say that my colleagues in physical medicine may sometimes be turned off by mental health patients because they have a lack of understanding of those patients. You know,
right.
to treat these patients, it's not like treating an x-ray or a lab value. It's not tangible. They are subjective assessments, right? They're coming to you saying, you know, I'm sad or I'm depressed. And for us, we say, well, yeah, we all get sad. Why is your sadness different than my sadness? And we have to understand that it's a little different level of sadness. It's a sadness that's pathologic sadness that's leading people to commit suicide or attempt suicide or not even function, not want to get out of bed, not be able to work, not being able to cook, not being able to shower or whatever. So we can't relate to that if we haven't right. experienced it. And for a lot of people, you know, in previous generations or whatever, we just say, you got to pick up your feet and do it. I don't understand why you can't do it. And so if you can't relate to that, you don't necessarily want to treat that. Whereas if someone's broken their arm, you cast it up, you move on. If someone's got high blood pressure, you treat that high blood pressure. Not to take away from what it is that they do and say it's simplistic or easy to treat by any means, but it's not necessarily the most attractive field
yeah.
for, you know, medical students or other medical providers to go into. And you know, when I was applying to medical school, I was asked the question of, do I want to go into psychiatry because my father was a psychiatrist? And at the time, I told them, I'm not really sure, because I know that it takes a special type of personality, and at the time, I didn't know if I had that personality. And what I tell my students now is, if you are not necessarily sure you want to go into it or necessarily interested in going into it, we don't want you in the field,
mm-hmm.
because it does take that type of personality.
Which is what?
Being able to separate yourself when you go home from what you've gone through that day.
Ooh.
Because what it is that we hear, what it is that we see, what it is that we experience has to be desensitized.
Mm-hmm.
My father taught me to leave work at work when you go home. When you go home, be it is who you are when you go home. Be the father, be the husband, be the son. Be the fan of the sports team. Be who
but
it is
how
you
do you do that today with the access to information and the plethora of it compared to 20 years ago? I mean, of people getting in touch with you instantly.
You have to set those boundaries. You absolutely have to set those boundaries. You know, I say I'm not accessible by email to my patients. I'm not accessible by cell phone to my patients. And I encourage that to my colleagues. And I tell them, you have to set those boundaries because you can't carry the load.
Right.
You know, if someone is struggling, one of your patients is struggling with some sort of horrific, you know, occurrence that happened in their life, and they come to your office and they're crying about it and they're carrying that load. If you go home and you carry that load for them, what good does that do for them that you carried that load? It doesn't do them any good. So if you don't separate, then you haven't done your field any good. You haven't done yourself any good. And you're just, you know, not accomplishing anything. You know, for psychiatrists, it is one of the highest professions that commit suicide, to be honest. It's not an easy profession to endure long term. So it's for those reasons that people don't always go into the field, and for that reason we don't have that many providers. Again, in medical school, people don't go into medical school saying, yeah, I want to go into psychiatry. They want to go into surgery. They want to go into trauma, medicine, family practice, because those are the attractive fields. They want to carry the stethoscope. They want to, you know, that's when they think of medicine, they wear the lab coat. That's the attraction to the field, not necessarily psychiatry. And so, you know, to get back to the point, we have lack of people going into the field. Again, the insurance companies love to take advantage of the fact that it's so subjective, and they try to make a cookbook, right? They try to say, well, this medication is not indicated for this condition, so we're not going to approve it for that condition. Well, medicine is not cookbook. Medicine is not black and white. It's gray. Well, I say mental health is camouflaged, right? It's camouflaged behind subjectivity. It's camouflaged behind substance abuse, behind dementia, behind delirium, behind psychosis, behind malingering sometimes. You know, it's that much more difficult to kind of figure out. So you're stuck behind that system of insurance companies taking advantage of the fact that it's a subjective field for people to try to explain.
Well, and it's a fabulous point you make, because, you know, I could have chest pains, go to UPMC Jameson Emergency, get a stent put in, and I'm fine. For what you do, it's totally different, isn't it? Because my question then is, how do you know what you've done has worked?
Because the patients come back and they tell me if they're doing better, or they tell me if they're feeling better. It has to be a little bit more than superficial, than saying, you know, I feel better. There has to be behavioral changes too. There has to be noticeable action taking place. And that's why I encourage family members to be a part of the treatment team, because a family member is oftentimes a better gauge of the patient's behaviors and actions than the patient themselves. Even for us personally, you know, my wife is sometimes a better gauge of how I'm doing than I am myself. It's easy for someone to say I'm fine, and they're not really fine. So when we see those things, and for us as clinicians, we learn to observe how they're doing, right? What we call our mental status exam is a physician's physical examination. So we don't listen to the heart or the lungs, but we notice the patient's affect or the physical expression of their emotion. We notice their mood. We notice their thought content and their thought process and their judgment and their insight. That's our status examination. And when we become keen observers of the difference between how they look and what they tell us how they feel.
And the key is, how do you extract that information from them? Right.
And that's the art of the psychiatrist. That's the art of medicine, and that's where our training comes into play. That's where our experience and the number of patients that we see and what we learned about the condition and the different faces of those different conditions over time.
Mm-hmm. So during this month, what are some of the things you like to talk about?
I like to talk about trying to make sure that patients understand, and people in general in the public understand, that, you know, mental illness, the stigma of mental illness needs to go away completely. That the people that are suffering from these disorders and these illnesses are no different than people that suffer from things like high blood pressure and heart disease and other physical manifestations. That they need to receive the same type of treatment on the same level as everybody else. Because, you know, somebody that commits suicide is going to die just as quickly as somebody that has a heart attack.
Right.
And so, you know, people with schizophrenia, for instance, on average die 10 years earlier than the general public. So why aren't we looking at illnesses like schizophrenia and bipolar with the same type of attention as somebody with heart disease? Because we can sometimes look at heart disease or cancer as almost lethal illnesses sometimes.
Right.
So why aren't we looking at schizophrenia and bipolar as lethal as those illnesses, and giving it the same type of attention and the same kind of resources from the public as we are those other illnesses, which are very easy, right? The heart is the major organ that pumps our blood, that gives us, you know, our life liquid. But we're not giving the brain the attention that it needs whenever it's sick in the mind, so to speak.
So it has to be of vast importance for you on ongoing discussions with the family of a patient too, right?
Yeah, because the family needs to recognize this, and they also need to support the patient rather than try to put them down and, like I said, not brush it off or blow it off, saying that, you know, they need to just pick up their feet. This is something that's, you know, that they're just kind of you know, stigmatizing again. Because if they stigmatize it, then they've lost the patient, and you know, ultimately, hopefully, they don't end up going down the wrong path and resulting in, you know, an increase in their, you know, morbidity and mortality.
Lori?
I just wanted to mention exactly along the lines of what Dr. Matta is saying, that there, I found that website pathway so that I can make sure we get it out there for people. Because when we join together as a community, you know, not only family members of the people who need that support, but just all of us having a deeper understanding of the importance that this is a process for people. So that is mentalhealthamerica.net/feelslike. That's the site I talked about earlier that really is a resource to go on and look at what people have described, very poignant and very feeling, about the different ways that these illnesses are affecting them in their lives from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very human. You know, and that's the part that sometimes we don't realize, is that these are fellow human beings and they have feelings and perspectives about their feelings.
What's the future
I think,
of what you do?
I think the future is going to be in things like dementia, because as the baby boomers continue to
right.
reach that age limit, that's where the research is going. I think we're learning a lot more about different other neurotransmitters in the brain, like glutamate. We know we've learned a lot about serotonin, dopamine, things like that. I still think we're learning more about bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. Hopefully, you know, the attack on pharmaceutical industry doesn't continue in medicine. I'm very sensitive about that because they're the tool makers, and I understand that there's kind of an issue with that in medicine because they feel like it's been over branded. But on some level, we need to work hand in hand with toolmakers and with the system rather than fight against it. So,
do you
think
they're being held back as advancement in medications?
Well, they're attacking them. There have been multi-billion-dollar lawsuit settlements against companies like Pfizer and AstraZeneca and Eli Lilly because of bad promotion based on a, you know, advertising law in the 70s. And is, you know, the FDA, I think, on some level just takes advantage of that, and the people that hate the pharmaceutical industry. I think there needs to be a balance with that rather than just a one-way fight. And at some point, I think the pharmaceutical companies are just going to pull out. Why
yeah,
should they?
It, well, just like the point you made, I mean, you know, we may not be able to function healthy without blood pressure medication, so why should it be any different with someone that has a mental health disorder?
Yeah, there needs to be a balance. You know, we need to continue to work. We don't have cures in medicine. We don't have that many cures. And we need to work towards finding ways to achieve it. You know, ideally, mental health still has a long way to go. And hopefully we can figure it out.
More information on what you do?
So work on the inpatient psychiatric unit and the partial hospital program at UPMC Jamison. This is reserved for patients that feel like they need inpatient care, so patients that may be a danger to themselves, to other people, or have an inability to care for themselves due to mental health problems. The partial hospital program is an outpatient program Monday through Friday. It's a group therapy-based program. They also have increased medication monitoring in that program. It takes place, like I said, Monday through Friday. And I also have my private practice in Neshanic, Psych Med Associates.
Always a pleasure.